Alistair McGibbon, I thought this report was at least a fairly good summary of the state of cybercrime and Australia's ability to deal with it. Would you agree with that?
What I thought was it was quite a refreshing report, particularly given the fact that it was produced by a parliamentary committee. It's easy for people who spend, you know, their entire working day in this space to get a handle on the issues. It's much harder to have people whose profession is politics to understand this space. And in my experience in dealing with the committee, I genuinely believe that they had an interest in understanding and they had a genuine interest in improving the lot of internet users in Australia.
Does it give the politicians a clear view, do you think? Is the emphasis right? Is there anything missing?
Well, look, my answer to this is going to be, by its very nature, subjective, because I appeared before the committee. I agree with many, not all, of the recommendations. And as a consequence, you know, there are going to be people out there that would say that, that the committee got it wrong. I would say that if an outsider was to pick up the document, it would give a pretty fair approximation of the state of play. And it's, the other thing I'd say is, and I look at the responses of people online, of course, and I spend a lot of time talking to, you know, much more technical people than I am, who can be highly critical of policy solutions or suggestions for policy solutions to some of these matters. But what I would say to them is they are not necessarily representative of the broader public. The broader public doesn't necessarily spend its time working on Linux machines with a whole range of other top class programs. They spend their time using commercial off-the-shelf products without a great degree of knowledge necessarily on what some of the threats are. And I think it's a fair approximation of the risks and threats to the broader public.
Well, I'll come to that because there's some interesting issues that you've been in the media about there. But look, the big recommendation, one key recommendation, was creating an Office of Online Security with a cyber security coordinator in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. Now, the Americans would call that a cyber czar, I'm sure. Is that a good idea?
Well, if that coordinator is given budgetary control, as in they're not just a person who is going to convene a series of committees where there are other people attending with their own budgets. If the person actually has, or if that office has budgetary oversight as well as responsibility for the strategy and the coordination federally, then I would say, yes, it's a step forward. If it is an office that merely is added to the mix of existing offices, then, you know, I would ask some questions about the efficacy of the recommendation. But there's nothing wrong, I think, and when I read what the committee suggested, what it's really saying is that there is an inextricable link between the end user, the public, and national security matters. And what we have failed to do so far in Australia, and I've been pretty public on this, is to actually draw a link between the two. So we have a bureaucracy around the national security side, which is quite well developed, reasonably well funded, and we have a bureaucracy, a smaller one, frankly, around the civil and criminal sides and how that affects the broader population. And I've argued for quite some time that we really need to be taking a holistic view of this. We need to be taking a connected view of the way in which both nation states and criminals are abusing both people and governments on the internet. And as a consequence, a centralised view, I think, is a sensible one.
Well, that's actually an issue I want to pick up on, because the recommendations include a National Cybercrime Advisory Committee. I'm assuming they'd be experts in the field, a National Government Working Group, which would be the politicians, an e-crime managers group, well, that's the police. This is a whole parallel structure to provide advice on online crime. I'm just wondering, is online crime really that different? I mean, crime is crime, and we already have these equivalent committees with the police and the politicians coordinating fighting crime, don't we?
Well, the Standing Committee of Attorneys General, SCAG, a lovely name, recently said that they need to focus on this matter and form a series of both working groups and committees on this to make sure that they maintain focus. The e-crime managers group does now exist, so it exists already. And indeed, there are many, many other fora that focus government's attention. I don't see anything wrong with actually having some people nationally, both from the states, territories, and the federal government, focusing their attention on this, because unless these matters get that type of policy focus, they just won't get the funding nor the policy thought behind them that is frankly necessary. So I don't think we're talking about huge bureaucracy there, and we're certainly not talking about a lot of cost. Those committees wouldn't meet very regularly. Now, there are already some existing committees that I think would fold into the ones that are suggested, so I don't see it actually as being a big bureaucratic thing. To me, one of the key recommendations that very few people have actually touched upon the report was actually the formation of an online crime reporting facility.
Yes.
And that to me, and again, I'm quite subjective on this in that I've strongly argued for one over the last period. That to me is a really strong thing, because it's all well and good for government to set up various offices and committees. It's all well and good for us to try to educate the public about how they should act. But the government also needs to be there when something goes wrong, and it can't be there unless it knows that something wrong has happened.
Well, that's the thing, because, if I report that my shop has been broken into and $10,000 cash taken from the till, I mean, I'll have a dozen uniforms down there, you know, within an hour. But if I'm...
Absolutely. It's not improper for the broader public online to expect at least the government to take their criminal complaint, which is very hard for them to do online today.
Agreed. And are we not at the situation where online crime, fraud, identity theft, and so on, I saw the figure, it's several years ago now, that this surpassed the international illegal drug trade just in monetary value.
Yeah, look, those figures come and go.
That's a bit of a propaganda figure, is it?
I think it can be very... those figures can be very self-serving, as we know. Mm. But it's fair to say, even without being able to put a dollar figure on it, that there's good money to be made with online crime, and there's significant money to be lost if you are an end user or a company, whether it's losing actual money from your credit card, whether it's your password and identity being stolen, which frankly has financial implications to you in terms of reputation, possibly credit, indeed time and effort to get back your identity if it's at all possible, through to the wholesale loss of financial details with corporates. So there is big money to be made, and criminals go where there's big money to be made, and they've flocked online. And we know that online crime gives criminals an ability to move outside their traditional jurisdictional boundaries. It lets them scale their attack in terms of, you know, the cost of each approach is quite low, as we know with spam, which is frankly criminal. Those things have allowed big money to be made, and I believe that governments need to invest significant money. It's not a lot of money, but significant money in building facilities for at least collecting the information from the broader public. If I was to turn up today to a police station and say that I had been hacked, I don't think I'd get a very good response from many of the desk sergeants or constables in any police station around the country. And that's a sad state of affairs for the Australian public.
It is, and I must admit that one of the things I thought was good about, you know, the report, there's a recommendation in there to set up actual proper training for law enforcement so that they're
yes.
across this stuff.
Look, a fantastic idea and high time. What we need to see, of course, is funding going towards those development, you know, whether they're virtual centres of best practice within law enforcement agencies or whatever form it takes. I believe it's high time for those things.
Well, look, one idea I found curious was getting the Australian Communications and Media Authority, ACMA, to coordinate this data collection about botnets and infected websites, not, for example, the Attorney General's Department with their new Cert Australia or Defence Signals Directorate, who I'm assuming have some sort of capability in this area. Is ACMA really the right agency to be, tapping on the shoulder for this stuff?
Well, ACMA did set up and run the pilot, which was the Internet Security Initiative, for the last several years, and has been working with a growing number of ISPs to collect information about rogue computers on the internet, and then working with those ISPs for the best action to be taken in actually fixing those computers. And that manifested itself most recently in the iCode that was a combination of the Internet Industry Association, the various federal bureaucracies led by the Department of Broadband and Communications, and ISPs. I must say, I think the iCode, and again, this will, I'm sure, endear me to several of your listeners, I think the iCode is actually too weak. I think that we need to be moving towards a walled garden approach that says, if my computer is determined to be acting in a manner that is likely to harm others on the internet, then I should, when I say be cut off from the internet, people seem to misconstrue this, I should be put inside a walled garden and given information on how I can render my computer less likely to be causing harm to others before I can then go and continue my normal internet sessions. Now, some people have interpreted that as being cut off the internet, then how would I get my patches and all those other things? That's not what I'm saying. So back to your original question, surprisingly, I'm off your question. ACMA has been quite active in the space of spam, quite active in the space of zombies and botnets. And you know, they've shown a good capacity. I don't know whether the committee has recommended the right agencies to handle this. I think I've read the committee's recommendations at a more macro level, I'd say, without looking at which department they're suggesting doing things. I've really looked at what are they suggesting being done. And anything, in my mind, that leads to a greater chance of detecting criminal use of my computer or someone else's computer, then that's a good thing. Again, I really don't care which department handles it. I care more about whether or not it actually reduces the likelihood of harm being done to me or someone else. And I'm sorry for my stream of consciousness
But
I want to. But can I dwell briefly on this point? There are many responses I see online to these types of things when I spruik them that say things like, "It's my right. It's my right if I want to go online unprotected, and who cares if my computer is compromised? And who is it for the government to tell me?" Well, I'd say to those people this very simple thing. Nowhere else in life, offline, are you allowed to do things that could potentially cause significant harm to others through your rights. You have a lot of rights online, and I'm not proposing that the vast bulk of those be harmed at all, but people shouldn't have a right to act in a manner that actually could harm other people. And frankly, there are many laws in place, seatbelt laws and others, that say you even don't have a right to the freedom of not wearing a seatbelt. And we've all got over that. I don't meet many people these days, even a lot of the motorcyclists who had a problem with being told they had to wear helmets, got over that issue. So we have to evolve as a society. We need to remember that these machines that we're using are no longer just toys or just used by an elite section of very smart people who understand technology. These are machines that are used by people like me, by people like my neighbours, the businesses that I deal with, and the government that provides services to us. And unfortunately, that's a very broad church of people, many of whom don't understand the consequences of their actions online and don't understand that if their computer is compromised, that it can cause harm to others and indeed to themselves. And it's the role of government, both on and offline, to help reduce the likelihood of that happening.
Look, you speak that speech very passionately and very powerfully, and it's hard to argue against. I mean, you know, cars have to have safety checks before they're registered. An electric toaster has to be approved before we can plug it into a PowerPoint, technically. And yet, part of me just goes, this is so complex. How can we have both the bureaucracy or software checks that says, yes, this device on this occasion is okay to connect online? I mean, it's not just people sitting at PCs. There are devices. There's a TV which happens to run Skype and YouTube these days. This is a massive change. I'm not sure how you can sell it politically.
Look, it is. And I have many devices inside my house, and I'm sure you do too. And I've looked at the comments online after last week when I went out and, strongly supported the committee. In fact, it said that I thought the committee should go further. And I've read those comments and I agree. Look, you know, my smartphone operates very differently to my laptop, which operates very differently to my my non-laptop device in the house and operates very differently to some gaming devices in other people's houses and the like. I agree. So I'm not saying this is an easy path, and I'm not saying there's a one-size-fits-all approach. But what I am saying is that philosophically, we as a smart bunch of people need to be having this debate. We need to stop going to conferences and saying why everything will fail. Look, I love speaking at IT security conferences, not because I'm an IT security expert. I love speaking at them because I'm meeting very smart people, most of whom are busy trying to prove why the other person is wrong and trying to prove why their solutions are going to fail. Now, we can spend an awfully long time doing that and all be seen as very smart people. Or we can be saying, look, everywhere else in the world, including in the technology industry when it's not online, says, let's make incremental improvements. Let's take this airplane and make it slightly safer and reduce the likelihood of something going wrong. And everyone hates my analogies, and I apologize to your listeners today for them as well. But the reality is that we have done this since time began. We have worked out how to improve things. We have never said that these things are necessarily step changes, nor are they silver bullets. What I'm saying is that we have to have a debate that says, is it time for us now to shift our emphasis from absolute freedom, which I believe also comes with a certain level of anarchy, which I'm quite comfortable with most of the time, to a place where we say we have a higher degree of predictability in whether or not the transaction I'm about to undertake is going to be the transaction that I authorized, and with a higher degree of likelihood that I'm actually visiting a website that I think I'm visiting, and with a lower degree of likelihood that someone's going to be prying into my communications and all those other things. And I believe if we take this to any other fora, if we took it to any other device or thing that we were using, you mentioned toasters before. There are indeed Australian standards. There are electrical safety commissioners in every state and territory in this country. If you're selling an air conditioner today, you need to make sure that there are the star ratings on what energy is consumed. If you're selling a gas appliance, the Department of Environment and Heritage federally will make sure that you have a star rating on how much gas is consumed. Yes, it costs money to have those things tested, and it costs money to have those stickers put in place. But people now consume items based upon those stickers. Now, I'm not saying this is a trivial matter. I'm not saying it's an easy matter. But I am saying that we've got over this in the offline world, and I can't understand, you know, and I'm happy to have this debate with any person, why we can't apply similar logic online. So whether that means my smartphone, as it connects to my ISP, or my telco, the telco sits there as an expert and says, we believe this device is as safe as it can be based on our current knowledge. Well, that's good enough for me because they're the experts. But what we've found in this world today is we've pushed everything to the end user, and we've said the end user has full responsibility for their safety and the integrity of their devices online. And yet I'm paying significant funds to my telco/ISP to provide me the bandwidth and the service. And they know a lot more about the safety and security of my device than I ever will. And I'm more than happy to subscribe to a telco that I trust and say to them, please tell me what I need to do to keep this device safer, or to keep this gaming device safer, or to keep my fridge safer or my TV if it talks to the internet. This is not an insurmountable problem. But it is a problem, and we need to start having a rational debate about it to see if we can actually progress as a nation. Now, it might well be, after we have that very rational, not heated, not name-calling, not vilifying people online discussion, which is what I see today, if we have that rational debate and ends up with people saying, look, it just ain't going to work, maybe we've advanced anyway because we've found a few byproducts that come from that discussion that incrementally improve our safety and security. I'd be happy with that. But what I can't understand is why, in this online space, people can't stand up for trying to protect people. And people are going to say that there's motherhood in there and there's a whole range of other things. But, you know, if your genuine interest is in protecting people, and if that's what you spend your time doing, then at least hear people out, at least have a discussion. And if we can have that rational discussion and we get nowhere, what have we really lost?
The important thing about this report, obviously, and look, I'm hearing your passion there, Alistair. And the thing is, this report now finally does put this on the table where it will potentially be discussed. There's a lot of ideas in there. What for you are the key ones? Is it this idea of really helping that end user and blocking problematic machines? Is it setting up the central coordination? What do you want to see happening first?
Well, I would say that some of these things go hand in glove. So if I was to put them in sort of broader buckets rather than the individual recommendations, I would say that it's very important for the government to be there for us no matter what, if something goes wrong. So I think the ability to report something that goes wrong is vital. I don't think it's very expensive, and I do believe that we can do that with or without a centralised bureaucracy. I think the issue of a centralised bureaucracy where there is strategy and budget held by, you know, a central area has some merit, and it would be interesting to see what the government's response is to that. So there are two things. The third thing is that I do believe that this report fundamentally shows a shift away from complete responsibility being with the end user and goes further upstream, both to government and to corporates. And I've worked for governments and I've worked for corporates, and I can say that's not a bad thing to have governments and corporates be a little bit more responsible for the stuff that they service. So there, what am I up to? Three. And the fourth thing I'd say is that the report also mentions the need for public health style education campaigns, because what we see at the moment just doesn't get the cut through. I mean, unfortunately, we're in a situation where we don't have really good statistics about what's happening. But what we do know is that we're not really changing user behaviours very much. And that may not matter to the really smart people who probably listen to this particular program. That's great. But what about the people out there who don't understand necessarily what they're doing online? And that's not being critical of them. That's just the fact that, you know, we pull these things out of boxes, plug them in, and away we go. We need, you know, there are several behaviours, particularly when we talk about youth, that need to change to protect people. So again, I'd say be there when something goes wrong, the reporting capacity. The potential for centralised government action interests me. The need for industry and government to take a role in protecting us, particularly industry, particularly ISPs and telcos, because they know. And the last one is a whole of government public health style education campaign to help change certain user behaviours. But there's no point running a campaign. A friend of mine says that education campaigns are, he says something along the lines that they're the argument of a lazy bureaucrat. So let's just go out and educate people and we'll change their behaviour. And look, I mean, given you'll change your behaviour because of a few pop-ups you see or some banner ads you see on a few websites. Well, we know that won't happen. It needs to be a systematic all-channel approach, similar to something like, our Sun Smart education. I mean, we've changed Australia's attitudes to the sun in a very short period, and we need to be doing the same thing online. And that took investment, but it also took a really smart way of thinking about how to educate people about the consequences of their actions, and we've failed to do that so far online.
Alistair McGibbon, we will have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time today.
Happy to speak to you anytime.